By contrast, when peasants were finally convinced this announcement of the end of obligations to nobles wasn't a hoax, they at first thought that it was, and then before their disappointments in the real substance of the reform set in, there was enormous excitement and enthusiasm. To give you one, again, fairly typical example recorded by one of the people working in the countryside at this point, one woman, a peasant named Lukeria, turned to the local manor house when she had been informed that this was really what was going to happen, that serfdom was going to end. And she gave a rather rude gesture with her hand, sticking her thumb between her first two fingers, the Russian version of giving the finger, and she stuck this, according to the Observer, greasy finger at the manor house and shouted, "And here's for you, Alexandra Sergeyevna," referring to the landlady of the home. Enormous shock, enormous excitement about what this meant. And this was the most important reform, would have enormous consequences, as we'll see in later years, but there were others. This was a massive series of changes. In 1863, a university statute was announced, which made universities more autonomous than they had ever been. In fact, most everyday decisions about what went on in the classroom, who was hired, what the curriculum would be, was put in the hands of faculty and deans were to be elected. In 1864, another major reform was enacted, a reform to allow new institutions of rural local self-government to be called in Russian the zemstvos. These institutions had existed in a different form in earlier years, but this was a whole transformation of the meaning of what a zemstvo, a land council, was going to mean. This reform allowed for the election of regional assemblies by all social groups living in an area, nobles and peasants alike, as well as nearby small towns. And the deputies elected by the nobles and the peasants especially were in charge of a whole variety of local affairs that used to be really the responsibility of serf owners, whose power was now much reduced. They were put in charge, for example, of local education. The zemstvo ran the local schools, except those that were run by the local church. And children had a choice of going to a church school or a zemstvo school. Road building, they handled all the local roads. Health care in the region was the responsibility of the zemstvo. Improving agriculture, finding new and better techniques, and advising both landlords and peasants on how to improve growing ways of growing more crops more efficiently than had been done in the past. All of this was clearly needed now that landlords were no longer in control the way they had been. In 1870 comes a comparable reform, a municipal reform that creates city councils functioned and structured very much like the rural zemstvos. In 1864, the legal system was reformed, creating a much more open and much more regularized judicial system than had ever existed in Russia. Among the important changes created was, for the first time in Russian history, the institution of jury trials. This was a radical innovation in the Russian tradition, law that was in the hands of citizens in many ways, decided by your peers. It also created a whole new class of lawyers that hadn't existed, whose job it was to defend individuals accused of a crime, to help them face these juries. And even more astonishingly, but characteristic of these reforms, trials were all to be open to the public. In fact, a principle was declared of what in Russian would become a more famous word in the 20th century, the principle of glasnost, a word that meant openness and publicity. We would hear it again as a principal notion behind Gorbachev's reforms in the latter part of the 20th century. In 1865, another reform of great significance comes, a reform of press laws. Now, up to this point, press was totally under government censorship. Anything you wanted to print, a newspaper, a book, a journal, had to be submitted in advance to the censorship office, and until they marked up everything that had to be changed or said, forget the whole idea, it couldn't appear. This was replaced by what was now called judicial punishment after the fact. For most books and journals, especially larger and fatter ones that were more likely to be read by the educated. Now it was simply a matter of if you said something or printed something that you shouldn't have and you're supposed to know what's allowed, then you go to a court and they decide whether you violated some of the restrictions in the law. This did much to allow a modern publishing industry to grow. It was much less cumbersome to produce a book or a journal or a magazine or a newspaper.